Hello and welcome. Please have the slides handy so that you can refer to them as we go through them. As slide one says, in order to effectively coach, we need to have competence in both recovery and wellness orientation and coaching orientation. And slide two will show you a grid, which is one of the ways that we approach this and think about it. So for instance, somebody may have high recovery and wellness orientation but no coaching orientation. Or conversely, somebody might have very high coaching orientation, be a master coach, but actually has no recovery and wellness orientation. And what we see is a wide range of mixes of people who sit somewhere on a graph like this. So what we want to be thinking about and understanding is, what does it actually mean to have recovery and wellness orientation? How do we know that it exists? What are the markers of it? And then what are the marks? What do we consider to be the marks and characteristics of coaching orientation? So that's what I'm going to take you through now. So let's go first of all to recovery and wellness orientation. I'd like you to go to slide four quickly, just because I want to make a point here that the recovery and wellness orientation contains common components and principles, but it's defined as well by the relevant specialities. So diabetes, substance misuse, etc., will influence the emphasis on different components. So for example, stigmatization and discrimination is probably more of a consideration in some healthcare challenges and less so in others. So we know that how we emphasize these kinds of components is dependent on the specialty itself. Now, if we go to slide five, and we can look through the first part of this, and we want to say, what is it that we want in recovery and wellness orientation to know? What are our knowledge domains, and what are required of us, of coaches? So the first thing that's required that we need to know is that we need to understand and recognize the full continuum of development of the condition, i.e. substance misuse and diabetes. And we're just using these as examples to make a distinction, and of course this would apply to any of the healthcare challenges that we want to talk about. Essentially, we need to have an understanding of how these conditions come about. What is the overall trajectory? And when, by how, I don't mean, you know, what is the underlying cause, but what is the other... how do they develop? What are some of the key stages? What is the overall picture? So diabetes type 2, for instance, we know develops over time. We know what the main factors are that contribute towards its most likely appearance. We know what it correlates with. And so we have a broad understanding of the development of the condition. And coaches need to have that if they're going to work with people with type 2 diabetes. It's not that the coach is required to become a medical practitioner. It's not, and you know, this is not the intention of this knowledge domain, but you need to have a broad understanding of what the development process is all about. Same with substance misuse, same with how something like, for instance, post-traumatic stress develops, anxiety develops, and so on. So we need to have that broad knowledge. Secondly, we need to have a knowledge of approaches to the prevention of the condition. So we need to understand what are the current approaches to, for instance, the prevention of type 2 diabetes or alcohol misuse or drug misuse. How does that come about? What are the broad approaches that are out there and being promoted? Then we need, if we go to the next slide, slide six, then we need to have an understanding of the process of the condition as it relates to people's goals, choices, preferences, and readiness for change. So what this means is that there is a relationship between the how the condition develops and what impact it has on people's goals in their life, the way they make choices, start to change perhaps in the way of their preferences, and their readiness for change, i.e. their readiness to do something about themselves in some way that will possibly change what they're experiencing. We need to have, let's be specific, we need to think about what is the impact of type 2 diabetes. What is it going to do how will it impact, should I say, on people's goals, their choices, and their readiness for change, and so on. So what are the markers as it develops in its severity? What is going to be the impact? And we need to have some broad landscape knowledge of that. The fourth knowledge domain is a knowledge of recovery and wellness support services, resources, and systems of care appropriate, relevant to the condition. So we need to, again, know what is out there, for instance, for type 2 diabetes patients, what are the typical approaches, what kinds of systems of care are offered in the environment in which we work or the environment in which our client lives, and what, you know, what might be being offered in the community. And so we need to have our head around that. We ought not to go into a recovery to wellness coaching relationship with a client who, let's say, has type 2 diabetes or another condition without having some broad strokes understanding of what's out there in the community. And again, it's incumbent upon the coach to make sure that they reach out and find that information for themselves as part of their practice as a coach. So we're now going to go on to recovery and wellness orientation from the perspective of behaviors. And this is an important point because a lot of people will say that they are recovery orientated. A lot of people will say that they're wellness orientated. But often their behaviors actually show us something different, i.e. there's a lot of confusion and collapse. And what we do is we actually focus in not so much on what are the thought processes or the thinking paradigms, but what are the behaviors that would evidence these thought paradigms and thinking processes and beliefs. So we're coming at this from a perspective of behaviors. So somebody who has recovery orientation focuses, as in number one here, focuses on a wellness, not an illness or medical disease model. So when we think about recovery, we are thinking not about the disease or the illness, we're thinking about how do we move towards wellness. Sometimes people come to me and they say, you know, I'm an addiction coach. What are you? And I say, well, I'm a recovery coach because my focus isn't on the addiction. My focus is actually on the recovery process. And we want to be sure that we are focusing on what I call the asset side of the equation, not the deficit side of the equation. And again, you've heard me talk about this before in other parts of the course, where we want to be thinking about and seeing what is actually present as opposed to what is not present, what is working, what is available as opposed to what is not working or not available. It was that principle four that we talked about, seeing as people as complete and yet continuously changing. So a behavior of someone who's recovery orientated is that they are skewed towards the wellness module. The second behavior is that they understand, respect, and support multiple pathways of recovery to wellness. Very, very important point. It's very understandable that people get very attached to their own point of view about how recovery happens. So people who've had a treatment that has worked really well for them will be biased towards that treatment. You must have this treatment. It worked for me, so I'm sure it'll work for you. We see this particularly when we come into behavioral problems like alcoholism, substance misuse, mental health recovery, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress syndrome, is that there's a lot of people become invested in thinking that the path that they took should be the path that everybody else takes. But in fact, in reality, there are often and usually more than one set of pathways. And to be recovery orientated is to understand, respect that, and support it. And certainly as coaches, we want to be doing that, because our clients, our role isn't there to tell them how to recover. Our role is there to coach them to find a recovery pathway that works for them. That recovery path may go left, it may go right, it may look like it's going back on itself, then go forward on itself, it may jump from track to track, and so on. And that's perfectly okay, because we accept that that is how it often is for people. Number three, actively avoid stigma, discrimination, and its associated language. Very important point. Again, we talked about this, and we're going to be looking at this more in the section under implicit and explicit priming. When we are recovery orientated, we do not use the language which is associated with discrimination, stigmatization, and we actively avoid it. The next one on slide 8 is collaborates and supports rather than directs and coerces. And of course, this again aligns with the tasks in the meaning-centered coaching model. And we're going to be looking at those later. So, but a person who's recovery orientated would be collaborative and supportive at both an individual and community level. Behavior number 5 supports and engenders individuals' personal empowerment, self-direction, and self-responsibility. So our focus is one of blowing on the embers or on the fire of personal empowerment, self-direction, and self-responsibility for our clients, for the people that we're working with. And that's what we do. That's the behavior. We're supportive, and our behavior is focused around engendering it, nurturing it. Number 6 behavior integrates respectful, mutual aid, peer-driven, where appropriate. So we all are familiar with the idea that there is something powerful for a human being to be with another human being who has an understanding of the process they're going through. So if I've had an illness and I meet someone else who's also had that illness, it can be incredibly powerful and supportive for us to spend some time together and to share the common experience of that and identify with each other. And if we are recovery orientated, we are willing and we integrate that where it's appropriate. The word respectful there jumps out as very important, because it links back a little bit to the multiple pathways principle, which is that we need to do the mutual aid connection respectfully, because although we may share the common ground of having had the healthcare challenge or having the healthcare challenge, we may not agree on what the pathway is. We may not agree on what the road from through our recovery process to wellness actually is. So we want to be respectful of that. On to slide 9. Behavior number 7 focuses on individual strengths and is person-centered. So this means that we, again, are looking at what strengths and assets lies in the individual. And being person-centered really points us to remember that even when we're working inside an organization or providing our service from inside that organization, whether it be a coaching service, a counseling service, the primary stake here is the person. They are at the center of that process, and that we should focus on that. Number 8 understands, respects, and supports holistic and non-linear approaches to developing recovery and wellness. Holistic and non-linear, I referred just now to the fact that pathways, recovery pathways, are often quite haphazard, can move around, can change, and so on. This really builds on that, because often there are lots of different ingredients. In fact, there ought to be probably lots of different ingredients that go into building recovery to wellness pathways. So there will be factors, relationships, community resources, perhaps groups, perhaps treatment providers, therapists, counselors, and so on, all contributing. There might be yoga classes. There might be all sorts of things we saw in that gateway diagram that are approaching and developing recovery and wellness. And we want to be aware that this is how it works. Secondly, that it's non-linear. Again, that it doesn't just start at A, go B, C, D, E, F, G, and bingo, we've got wellness. The reality of it is that it sometimes seems more like snakes and ladders than it does to being just a simple straight line. So again, we want to hold that as a behavior. And number nine, the behavior is that we actively promote hope as a tangible, vital component of recovery and wellness. This is really crucial, and really the best way to understand why it's crucial is to try and take it away. Imagine if we didn't promote hope. Imagine if we promoted lack of hope, that there was no hope. Of course, this would be a pretty profoundly impactful way of going out about the world, and certainly would make it almost impossible for us to be out there engaging with people around changing their lives and building recovery to wellness journeys. The idea that we could do that from a place of no hope, there isn't any hope, is unthinkable. And more than that, we want to actually promote hope. We know that recovery is possible. We know that people can change their lives, can change their behaviors. We know that people can have profound, meaningful lives. And we want to hold from recovery orientation a clear stake in the ground for that and promote that. And that it is a tangible and vital component of recovery and wellness. People who have hope that is possible are people who are much more likely to be engaged in the process, and people who have meaning in their lives usually find it much, much easier to be hopeful, if not be completely connected to hope and possibility. Despair is often the absence of meaning and hope in an individual's life, so actively promoting hope is crucial.